You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Thursday, January 6th, 2022, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Kara Santa Maria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Welcome to the new year, everyone.
Yep, first show of 2022, although technically last week's episode aired on January 1st, but it was recorded in 2021. So this is the first show recorded in 2022. We had a couple of weeks break from our regular show, and it seems like so much has happened.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, we're like, in memoriam, oh, shit, Yo Wilson died. Like, yeah, all this stuff happened, like, right after we recorded.
And Betty White almost made it to 100.
Oh, my God.
How,
how close
away
can you get, man?
So close. Legendary John Madden, you know him from football or playing the video game Madden football.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost him too. So a lot of big
names. And we were talking about all the political figures that died, and then Harry Reid died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, again, kind of the same generation, you know, as a lot of the other politicians who we've lost it during 2021. So yeah, there was, you know, that little week before the end of the year, a lot of notable people died.
Oh, and I caught
COVID. Let's see, what else has happened in the last couple of weeks?
I got sick as a dog with COVID. There was that.
Yeah, the SGU's perfect streak of not catching COVID was broken.
I know.
Done. Not just once, but twice.
Yeah,
Jay,
I got
right?
it too.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, my God.
I apparently got something in my stocking on Christmas Eve, and I pulled it out, and it was COVID. So there it was.
I don't know what
so
it is.
Steve
it feels
just told
spiky.
Me. That the yeah. last show we recorded, so when was that, Steve? December 22nd, when we recorded the year-end review show, and Jay was coughing through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Got a light version of it, just a bad head cold, no breathing problems at all, and then horrible fatigue.
Oh, yes, yeah. The fatigue was brutal for me as
yeah,
well.
I'm still kind of dealing with it, to be honest with you. Like, I have the bottom drop out, and when it drops out, I fall asleep. Like, I'm done. That's
yeah,
it.
I felt it for about 10 days. Only at the 10th day did I finally feel I was 95% back to where
and
I was
And you guys
prior.
Are all fully vaccinated.
Boosted.
I got my booster just a couple days prior.
The more of my friends have COVID right now than at any other course in this pandemic. Very likely because I tend to associate with people who are vaccinated, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that Omicron is managing somehow to overwhelm the immune system, even if you're vaccinated. Luckily, even though we're seeing hospitals rates going way, way, way up, I don't think we're seeing the sickest of the sick going up.
No,
we're not seeing deaths going up.
I don't want to imagine how I would have felt if I did not have my
exactly
my vaccinations
yeah.
and my
yeah,
booster.
That's the question.
That would have been horrific.
But then, you know, to get COVID after 2 years of, you know, changing the way I live my life, I was really disappointed. You know, I felt angry. And that, you know, then I was talking to Steve quite a bit over vacation. You know, I kept calling Steve just like saying, here's how I'm feeling today. What do you think about this? Like just trying to get like more of a professional. When I had it, I'm like, oh, my God, I was like so depressed. But then Steve said, you know, it's super catchy. It's very, very easy to catch. And that made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, we were at the beginning of the pandemic, we were talking about how contagious COVID is. Omicron variant is 18 times more contagious than the baseline virus.
Yeah.
It's super contagious.
I think that experience that you had, Jay, is really common. It's something I've been talking about with patients. It's something I've been talking about a lot with my friends lately, is this feeling almost of personal failure.
Yeah.
This feeling of guilt and shame, which I think we really, really need to work society-wide to reduce. You know, I don't think we should go so far as to say, well, everyone's going to catch it, so whatever. I think that that's kind of an unhealthy view as well. Although there is a chance you will get it. You should still continue to be as safe as possible and to do all of the risk prevention things that you've been doing, if not more. But if you do catch it, it's not because you didn't try hard enough.
Right.
You did everything right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's scary about it. Yeah. You know, that's the conclusion I came to because, you know, I didn't have like a flagrant, like, I'm going to go out without my mask on, which I would never do. And I'm, you know, or I'm going to hang out with people that I suspect could have it. Like, I didn't break any of the protocols that kept me healthy for 2 years. And after I got over the initial shock and like, wow, this virus is in my body now, you know, it's freaky when you get it because it's a head game. You know, you just sit there and you're like, I've got COVID, I got that thing, you know, that I've been trying to fight against for the last 2 years. But then, you know, luckily when I got it, and Evan, you know, same with you, we were vaccinated. So a percentage of the danger was eliminated. And then knowing how catchy it is, you know, I'm like, I did, you're right, Kara, I did everything I freaking could do and I still got it. Like, what did I do wrong? You know?
It's doing what a good virus does. A good virus evolves to be really easy to catch, but not kill its hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the classic.
That tends to be how pandemics burn themselves out, because the selective pressure are for infectivity, not deadliness. And so over time, that's just by statistics alone, that's where the virus is going to head. But I agree. And you don't judge by outcomes, you judge by actions. And so as long as you're being safe and you're fully vaccinated and boosted, if you get it, at some point, it's a luck of the draw.
Right.
You know, like I am extremely careful, and I'm actually even a little surprised I've made it 2 years without getting it. I work with people every day. I have to do procedure. Like, I have to get in people's face. That's just the nature of my job. And you know, I would not surprise me if, despite my best efforts, I still get it at some point.
What are you wearing, Steve, on your face when you're like in someone's face?
You know, the medical masks,
surgical masks.
But they have this like triple layer, like really thick surgical mask that really fits to your face very well.
Well, compare it to an N95. Is it better?
No.
It's not quite as good as an N95. But N95s are just very difficult to talk through for me. The heavy duty medical masks, you know, surgical masks are fine.
I've been double masking whenever I go out. I'm double masked. I have my AKN N95 on, and over that I've got my, you know, my cool cloth one that's got something,
that's
something
a good
creepy
idea.
On it. So,
but make sure you're doing it that direction. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was out with my mom.
Don't put the cloth under the N95. Yeah,
that would defeat the whole purpose.
I was showing my mom, and she puts the clothy one on first. I'm like, no, that defeats the purpose.
No.
But the real important thing here is, like, Christmas was kind of like blown out of the water for the Novella family. So I spent, this is my Christmas Eve, first time ever, just me and my mom. And we binged an entire season of Ink Master Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day, we did the next season. Goddamn, binged a whole season. And it was fun. We had a blast together. And, you know, I still would have loved to have, like, seen everybody that we had been planning. But no, it wasn't to be.
I got my hands on one of those Nintendo Classics that came out a few years ago. So it's basically the NES,
nice.
But shrunk down. So instead of using cartridges, all the games are preloaded.
Yeah,
hint,
nice.
You can get them hacked online and they, like, load them with thousands of games.
Oh, gosh. Get lost in that one.
Yeah, I played a lot of Dr. Mario, a lot of Mario 3, a lot of Kid Icarus. All my favorite games.
Nice.
It was fun. Cool. It was fun Christmas all alone. I enjoyed it, but it was sad. I mean, I think things are different now, and we're sort of trying to get used to it. I have a fear, and Steve, I'm curious how you feel about this. Not a severe fear, but being kind of in the first cohort of people getting vaccinated, I'm afraid my booster's not effective anymore. Like, I got boosted back in October.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's going to last at least 6 months.
I hope so.
The data suggests that. But it could last even longer. The antibody response is greater, so hopefully the duration will be greater.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So we'll see. We have to wait and see.
Do you see this as being, and I know we'll get there with predictions and stuff, but as being sort of like, okay, you get your COVID shot every year just like you get your flu shot every year.
Like,
eventually
yeah,
no we're going to be.
Yeah.
Yes, no question in my mind. Now.
I just hope that the next booster that becomes available is not
the
same formulation. Yeah.
They're already working on it.
Good.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think they could have done it for this one, but basically the evidence says if you get boosted, your antibody titers are so high, it'll protect you from Omicron. So they didn't bother manufacturing the next version. But I think they're gearing up to do that.
Yet a lot of people are getting Omicron even with their booster. They're just not getting that sick.
They're just not getting sick.
Right.
Which is fine.
Well, they're getting sick still. They're just not getting as sick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're not getting, like, going to the hospital
at
sick.
No point did I feel I had to go to the hospital, or my wife Jennifer or my daughter Rachel. We all had it. And none of us got to that point where we felt that bad.
But my concern is that we're still looking at the risk-benefit analysis at acute disease. And we're not very often talking about long COVID and the concerns about that. So, you know, maybe you only get mild to moderate illness that doesn't land you in the ICU and you don't have to be on a vent, but you're dealing with fatigue for 6 months, 9 months. You're dealing with cognitive symptoms downstairs. I mean, it's still not something that we want.
Yeah, there are some people who don't get their sense of taste and smell back, or they don't get it the same. Like it's screwed up when it recovers. It's like food tastes horrible, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of disability, lots of what we call morbidity. You know, it's not just a life or death. If you survive it, you still may be dealing with chronic symptoms.
Yeah.
It's definitely part of the toll of this disease.
Jay, I lost some of my COVID weight because I lost a lot of my appetite during the course of that 10 days. So my food consumption went way down.
That is so weird, Ev, because I actually took note that my appetite went up.
Of course it did, Jay.
I'm dead serious.
Oh,
I lost hungrier.
My appetite. Oh.
Like, I felt like my body needed, I was like weird hungry, you know? Like, I was just hungry all the time.
Mm-hmm. Pickles and ice cream.
Which is not that far of my baseline, but still, I was hungrier.
All right, so the first episode that we record in each year, we do our psychic prediction review. We look back over the predictions made for the previous year to see how the psychics did. This is always just a bit of fun because they, of course, uniformly do horrible because there's no such thing as a real psychic. But, we do like to look at patterns, to see. I like to break it down. There's a few types of predictions that people make. There are ones that are crazy for entertainment purposes only, and like nobody expects them to come true. You know what I mean? Like Bigfoot will be discovered. Like just crazy ass shit that is like just, the prediction is purely the entertainment. Then there are those who are like trying to be successful as alleged psychics predicting the future, where they make high probability predictions, right? Like things that any reasonable person could make a guess.
Yeah. Things that happen every year.
Yeah, exactly. If there's going to be a major earthquake in Europe, like there is every year. And then there's the throwing shit against the wall and hope that something sticks, right? Just make a bunch of wacky ass predictions and then just only remind people about the ones that you got right in retrospect.
Yep, that's the psychology of it.
Yeah. So it's usually one of those things. So, I'll note that, I don't think any psychic, nailed any of the big events, 2021. That's always the first thing, what they didn't predict.
Right.
There was definitely a theme. There was a strong, strong theme of psychics predicting that COVID, that the pandemic was going to go away in 2021.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That was clear. That was like and they were just, again, that was the high probability. Oh, we have the vaccine. So yeah, by the end of the year, things should be better. So that's a pretty safe prediction. Not completely got it wrong. One even said the variants will be no big deal. Like, no. Completely wrong.
Gosh.
I didn't see, I read dozens and dozens of predictions about 2021 and the pandemic. I didn't read anyone where they got it substantially correct. They all sort of thought that 2021 was going to be the end of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's true. I think there was a couple people, I think I saw something on like a more of a political prediction site that was like, things aren't going to be any better next year. But that was really rare. And I think they're just like, we wanted things to be better.
Yeah.
So of course, that's going to be what we tended towards. I looked at the people who write up Nostradamus's prediction.
Yeah.
It's always making me laugh.
Still doing that, huh?
Yeah. How long did the almanac go for? Because there's some 2021 here. And my favorite is when you have to actually find that they're date stamped at the beginning of the year.
Yes.
You can't find something now to say, this is what
right.
I said.
That's the whole point. You've got to
find
the year.
The January 2021. Right?
Very important. Yeah. So let's see. A global famine, solar storms and asteroids. I love this one because the interpretations are almost as fun as the original writing, right? Because I think this is Nostradamus was what, French? Yeah. 460 some odd years ago was when he wrote Les Prophéties.
Right.
And and if you read the original translation, I mean, it's like the sloping park, a great calamity through the lands of the West and Lombardy, the fire in the ship, plague and captivity, Mercury and Sagittarius, Saturn fading. And the interpretation here, an earthquake will destroy California. The lands of the West will have great calamity.
There's nothing like vagary to make predictions come true.
And this one's my favorite one that did not come true. Here we go. A few young people, half dead to give a start, dead through spite. He will cause the others to shine and an exalted place, some great evils to occur. So this has been viewed as the zombie apocalypse occurring in 2021.
Oh, my God.
Remember when that happened?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Would have been fun.
The other kind of prediction that I forgot to mention is the absolutely vague, like completely nebulous, pretty like people will be more interested in traveling in 2021.
That's right.
Okay. Or people will be interested in connecting with one another, like all that kind of vague stuff. It's completely
yeah, general
like,
sense of harmony will abound.
It's horoscope predictions. Yeah. It's like right, the astrology of like be especially prudent in your business dealings. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Duh.
Especially
high grade fortune cookie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I went with Jemimaya Packington. We've talked about her before. The aspermancer. She's the one who throws the asparagus on the floor and claims to have predictions.
It's as good as any other method.
Absolutely. You know, got to hand it to her. At least she's original. She came up with something nobody else did. So I'll give her points for originality. She spoke of COVID-19 early in the year, and she says that the vaccines will bring a return to the new normal by June of 2021. Although not a full return to pre-pandemic days. And like Steve, like you were saying, that was kind of in tune with what all the psychics were sort of saying about it. And no.
It was both high probability and wrong. Right?
So, right.
It was a lazy prediction.
Totally lazy prediction.
Yeah.
Now, being from Great Britain, of course, there's a lot of things having to do with the royals. She says at least two divorces and Harry will return to the UK on his own in March, where he will be advised to not be an extension to his current terms. I have no idea really what that means.
What?
But Harry did not go back to the royal family in March, and there was nothing like that. And two divorces, I don't think that happened. I looked it up. I couldn't find any royal divorces. She also said former President Trump will be disowned by the GOP members because of his appalling handling of the U.S. domestic situation. That did not happen either. She said that Queen Elizabeth II will make big announcements in June on her birthday. No, she didn't, because what she was basically saying there is that she was going to go into either semi-retirement or full retirement and make announcements that Charles will take over soon. Nope, didn't happen. But this one she got right, at least in one sense, a spate of ill health among royals of all age. Well, you know, Elizabeth's husband, Prince Philip, did die late in the year, but of all age, no. I didn't read anything else about any of the royals otherwise having some major health issues. So she was, for the most part, entirely wrong.
Here's a question. What 1973 movie takes place in 2022?
What year?
Wait.
1973.
That's going to be Soylent Green, right?
Battle of the Planet of the Apes.
Soylent Green. Yeah.
Oh! Soylent Green. Good job. So that Soylent was an interesting Green. Vision of 2022. Massive overpopulation, climate change already wrecking the planet, and mass supply difficulties, food shortages.
Mm.
You know. But there's Freshies? Lots of and very delicious, chips to eat.
Soylent Green. Yeah, there's also Soylent yes. Red and Soylent Yellow.
Soylent Red and the new Soylent Green.
I forgot about those other ones. Wait, were they in the movie?
Red and Yellow, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Green was the new version that just was coming out.
The latest,
so what was
greatest.
The red and yellow then? What were they made of?
They're made of people.
So those two?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Ostensibly made of plankton, but we know the truth.
You get dragged away screaming if you know the truth, though.
All right. Does anybody have any other psychics they want to report? Should we go to our predictions?
Well, real quick, I got Nikki. Psychic Nikki was good.
She's a favorite.
She had a good one. Yeah. She's like, future holds good news for the state of the planet. The planet's going to be it's going to be cleaned up. It'll be cleaner, healthier planet, and the population will get healthier. No comment even needed. The other two are even better. She said some people might not want to be vaccinated, but the majority will, and I think it'll start definitely by the fall. Definitely.
51%.
Well, the majority of people in at least in the U.S. are vaccinated.
But when you look when you go global, it's horrible. And let's see, and her confidence is definitely misplaced. And here, this one, of course, really struck home for me and my mom. People can look forward to a much more festive and celebratory holiday season in 2021. I think we're going to have a much better Christmas next year, Christmas and New Year's. Says Nikki. If two seasons, right? Two seasons of Ink Master is very celebratory. So no, but they were good seasons. Got to say, It was fun.
I didn't go to psychics. I found myself interested in predictions that people made. I guess you can call these political predictions or you know, social predictions that just – so the former prime minister of Ireland, he said this late in 2020 about 2021. He said, with the vaccine, with mass testing, and with the knowledge of how to prevent and treat this virus, I think the pandemic will end in 2021.
To flat out end.
You are incorrect, sir.
You are wrong, sir. Good
and
day,
then,
sir.
You guys know who Scott Adams is, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
He's the guy who does the Dilbert comic. And he said in July, if Biden's elected, there's a good chance you will be dead within the year. Republicans will be hunted. Police will stand down.
That happened.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened.
A little paranoid there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody overdoes the insanity predictions of, you know, the new president coming in for the most part.
You know,
it's just a ridiculous bunch of ridiculous statements. You know, I got to tell you, like, when I look at the psychic predictions versus, like, a whole boatload of political predictions that have been made, the political predictions are actually a lot more interesting.
Yeah,
because they're actually saying something, you know, like these two are great examples. Like they're saying something that's tangible, like, you know, the pandemic is going to end, you know, like, no, it's not. Most of the predictions are like what you say, Steve. They're very general. They're blasé. They're hedging their bets. I find that to be very boring. You know, I like it when somebody says this specific thing is going to happen. I think that has a lot more weight to it.
Right. Like that's what we do every year when we come up with ours.
That's right.
I think my favorite along those lines, Jay, and I think I know kind of like where you're sourcing some of yours, has to do with an article that was published in Egypt Today in September of 2020. They were referring to the Suez Canal, and they said, quote,
oh, yes, I remember that.
With improved equipment, it is expected that there will also be improved and safer navigation along the canal. And then what, 5 months later,
they had the, like,
that container ship got stuck for 6 days.
Oops. All right, let's move on to our predictions. I'm excited to tell you about my predictions.
All right, I want to hear. Remind us.
All right, number one, the Artemis mission's return to the moon will be delayed by 1 to 2 years.
True.
Nailed it. Yeah. Nailed that prediction.
Yeah, that was
it
hard.
How
was
often
delayed
can that prediction be
by 1 year
brought out?
Yeah, right.
Every
we can
year?
Recycle that one. But yeah, so that was a solid, completely accurate prediction.
Was it a crystal ball, Steve, or a tea leaves? What is your preferred method?
It was asparagus. I like the asparagus.
Oh, you ripped off the asparagus.
Although I use white asparagus. That's the difference.
That's the trick.
I'm a banana mancer. I use Gros Michel bananas.
And only Gros Michel. All right, number two. The closest fast radio burst, FRB, source to the Earth will be discovered. Let me introduce you to FRB 2020120E, which is 40 times closer than any other known extragalactic FRB.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice job.
40 times closer, but how close?
11.7 million light years away.
And how did you word that your prediction?
The closest FRB source to the Earth will be discovered.
All right. Technically accurate.
Wow. I could get myself
which
some
is the only kind of accurate. All right. And then number three. A remarkable archaeological find will disrupt our understanding, our current understanding of the time period in question. All right, so I went a little vague with that one. However,
a little.
Uh-oh.
You managed to find something to slot right into it, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I looked up the 10 like most interesting archaeological finds of 2021.
And all 10 of them fit?
They're all candidates. They're all candidates. But my favorite was the world's oldest pet cemetery was discovered. 2,000-year-old pet cemetery in Egypt's Red Sea coast. And this does completely change the way we thought about the relationship between people and pet and animals at that time. Because, you know, the thinking was that they were mainly utilitarian, you know.
Yeah.
But some of these pets were lovingly placed in graves, surrounded in banana leaves or palm leaves, one of them was. So they were clearly treasured pets. Some of them were toothless, which means they had to have been
taken care of.
You know, yeah, they had to be taken care of. They died very, very old.
Or their teeth were stolen after they were buried. But what kind of pets are we talking about?
Dogs.
Cats and dogs living together?
Mostly dogs and cats, but there were some other ones.
Birds, maybe?
But so they were definitely companion animals. They were definitely companion animals.
were they?
So I don't know. I don't know if you want to give me credit for that one. I mean, yes. It was kind of a deliberately vague one, but
why not? Yep. Points.
Yeah. So three out of
points
three.
To Steve.
Three
out white of asparagus never lies. Yeah,
that's a half point.
two and a half to three, depending on how generous you want to be.
Okay.
All right, Evan, you're next. What'd you
All
say?
All right. Earthquake during the Olympic Games in Japan will be happening. And I also mentioned a few other details. Limited loss of life, but damage will have an impact on the venues and will cancel some events. There was, in fact, a magnitude 6.0 earthquake which struck off the coast of Japan in the middle of the games. The tremors were felt by many people and definitely confirmed by Japan's meteorological agency. News reporters, a news anchor, Lester Holt, tweeted that he felt the earthquake for about 20 seconds. Some buildings were rattled and did have some movement. However, there was certainly no loss of life, and no events were canceled as a result. So I'm like, I don't know, three-fifths correct, I think, on that one.
You got the high probability part. Earthquakes.
Earthquakes. I mean, that is the worst psychic prediction possible.
I know.
So I looked this up. Look, earthquaketrack.com, cool website. So this was for Japan. You just look up Japan, okay? Two earthquakes in the past 24 hours, 12 in the past 7 days, 45 in the past 30 days, 655 in the past 365 days. There's two earthquakes every day in Japan to some degree. So it's like, duh, it's like water is wet. You know, there's your next best psychic prediction. So, yeah, earthquakes are garbage predictions. But, hey, that didn't stop me from making it. Next was my next prediction was global warming trends will plateau in 2021 and will be the same as 2020. 2021 will be the sixth or seventh hottest year on record and hotter than any year prior to 2015. It was a La Nina year, which tends to be cooler than El Nino or neutral condition years, but still was when compared to the last La Nina year, it was definitely hotter. NASA concluded that 2020 had been the joint hottest year on record, but 2021 was not. It was close. It was, in fact, consistent with the long-term human-caused global warming trend of about 0.2 degrees Celsius per decade. So the rise did continue. Oh, and the summer of 2021 tied the 1936 Dust Bowl for USA's hottest on record. And that's very bad news. So I would say I've totally failed.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
In that prediction, it's in fact continued on its path towards, you know, bad stuff coming sooner than later. So I was wrong there. My third and final one was a prominent celebrity psychic will come clean and confess that their entire career has been a ruse.
Oh, how you meta.
Nope, I looked long and hard. Nope, I didn't find anything like that whatsoever. So I did not do very well in my predictions.
I thought you did pretty good, though, Ev, like all considering.
Well, I mean.
Well, based on like the psychic standard, sure, you were as good or if not better than any psychic out there.
That is the point, yes. I was absolutely no
as
worse
bad as you were.
Than the people. Right, because I give you mine for free, basically. they are charging you, in some cases, $1 million for their
That's
information.
True.
And I'm all equally right. accurate.
Bob, you're next on my list.
Okay, so my predictions last year. Number one, a plague of bunnies.
Is that even possible?
I haven't seen any solid evidence. Just rumors on that.
Well, doesn't Australia have plagues of rabbits?
There you go.
Are they considered plagues?
But yeah, was just for laughs. And then let's see the next one: naked eye visible supernova, only visible in the hemisphere where Bob is not.
Well,
and I'm still confident that that's going to happen in the near future. It just didn't happen in 2021.
Shame.
Some amazing thing in the sky is going to happen, and I will not be able to see it. That's pretty much guaranteed. That's not even a prediction. It's just a guaranteed fact of the universe. And then my final prediction from last year, COVID variant that is less lethal. Omicron.
You get credit for that. Absolutely.
Kind of, but it's still kind of like not a hard prediction to make. Cause you know, that's kind of the way things go.
You did better than the vast majority of psychics out there.
Yeah, 1 in 3. And I wasn't even really trying.
All right, Kara.
So the first one, left intentionally vague, more acres will burn worldwide than in any other modern recorded year.
Okay.
Is that true?
So it looks like in the U.S. the number is slightly down, although when did the Colorado fires start? technically, was that 2021 or 2022?
21, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think that any of that has been added to 2021 calculations yet. But I did say worldwide, and yeah. I cannot find a total number yet. Maybe it's because we're only 6 days into the next year. But I am seeing that there are places across the world that records have been set. In Russia, in Turkey, in Greece, in Italy, in Lebanon, Syria, Algeria, Israel, Cyprus, North Africa, we are seeing record wildfire seasons. So I think the jury's still out on the physical number of acres. But I'm going to say I'm mostly right because we're seeing wildfire records across the globe. Sales on home gym equipment will reach an all-time high. So as I started to research this, I was saddened when I found an article in the Washington Post about Peloton. It said Peloton feels the burn as Americans head back to the gym. Their shares slumped more than 35%. Sales of home fitness equipment in 2021 are still up about 100% over 2019, roughly 20% over last year.
Okay.
And I'm seeing in global figures that the compound annual growth rate of gym equipment sales is 2.8%. So we are up over all previous years this year.
I bought one. I bought something in 2021 as well. And it's kicking my butt.
What'd you get? Did you get a rower?
It's an elliptical with the arm bars. This one, after 5 minutes, now granted, I haven't done any serious cardio in a month. So for me, that's a long time. But 5 minutes, and I can't even talk. I can barely talk. This is really, your legs are forced to go really high, and it's fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to really building up the minutes every day, because this is such a good cardio.
Not really exercise unless you feel you're damaging yourself.
Yeah, totally. And thank you for contributing to my to my prediction, Bob. And then a great political mind will unexpectedly die. Did anybody unexpect Desmond Tutu died?
They were all old.
I know.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of great political minds that died.
But none of them that we would, none that I would say were unexpected.
I don't know. I'm going to keep Googling for if you guys are wrong.
None that I would say were great. Do it. All right, Jay, what were your three? You had four, actually.
All right, so the first one I said, it will be revealed that Trump leaked U.S. secrets to foreign interests. I don't believe that is correct.
Yeah, I don't think there's any new revelations.
Yeah, what about the Haitian president who was shot last year?
Was he a great political mind?
Well, did I say great or did I say political?
I said great political mind.
Well, influential. Great is a very subjective term. I intentionally got that vague. There you go. Sorry, Jay. Go ahead.
All right. So I don't think I was correct about the Trump leaking secrets.
No.
I said cryptocurrency used as main currency. I'm giving myself a hit on that one because a lot more people are using cryptocurrency as a way to pay for legitimate goods. Some websites I noticed this year started to take cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency has been added to Venmo. It's been added to PayPal.
But what does it account for, like 0.2% of currency transactions?
I didn't give a percentage.
I'm sure it's very low.
If one person used it to buy something, Jay was correct.
To be fair, I actually was thinking exactly what happened because I pretty much knew it was going to happen.
All right.
Let's move on to the next one. China will crack down on protesters in Hong Kong using open lethal force. They didn't openly use lethal force on the protesters.
They cracked down like crazy.
But they did say that they could use lethal – the Navy could use lethal force against water-based
– So the protesters at sea?
No, but they did say that, but whatever. I was wrong.
So, Jay, what's the lesson here? Are they all too specific?
No. I mean, I'm trying to pick things to be specific. You know what I mean?
That's why I like our predictions, right?
Yeah, it was a good level. A good level of specificity.
And there's one more, and arguably the most important prediction I made is that beards will go out of style.
Mm-hmm. I think beards were at an all-time high in 2020.
They were at an all-time freaking high.
My beard never grew longer.
You know what it is, Kara? I'm a visionary. I was too early in my prediction.
You're a year ahead. Yeah. All right, well, let's see. All right, so quickly, guys, we're going to read through our predictions for 2022. We'll go in the same order, so I'll start. Okay. Prediction number one, a new social media fad will sweep the world, largely ignored by anyone who matters. Item number two.
Oh, already boy. A hit.
Yeah, astronomers will detect a third extrasolar object in the vicinity of our solar system, spawning another round of speculation about alien origins.
Cool.
And item number three, so that's a real and very specific prediction.
Yeah.
Item number three, a book about predicting the future will be published this fall, taking the world by storm.
That took me a second.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
You've lost your mind.
Yeah, who the hell would write that?
I hope that one happened.
That's a high probability prediction. All right, Evan.
Number one, 175 zettabytes of data.
Whoa.
Which we are expected to reach worldwide by 2025, will actually occur by the end of 2022, 3 years ahead of schedule.
Whoa, I like this one. Ooh. All right.
Okay. And we're not at the yottabyte yet, Bob. Sorry. I tried to go yottabyte. I just couldn't do it.
Getting there, my friend.
2030, they're thinking. All right. Number two, $1 billion or more in cryptocurrency theft in 2022. Now, that's actually a big deal because this stuff is supposed to be, you know, pretty locktight, that, you know, theft proof in a sense. But I think the thieves are going to get in there and crack it and really open up $1 billion or more of damage in crypto. Number three, an AI designed drug will be clinically tested on humans.
Oh, cool.
Mm.
Cool. That's fun.
There you go. Three predictions for 2022.
All right, Bob?
I will say that a new hominin skull will be discovered. Brand spanking new hominin
skull. Oh, species? Like not just another hominin skull, but a whole new species?
A whole new, yes.
Okay.
So a human,
definitely discover a hominin
skull. Like along that line, you know, a human ancestor type.
Homo bobificus.
That'd be cool. And then prediction number two, Avatar 2, which will be released in 2022, will suck.
Bob, why would you say that?
Awesome.
I say that for one reason. I don't even necessarily believe it, but I loved Avatar. It was so cool, and it's been way too long, Cameron. Way too long. And you know that,
research.
Like talk about striking when the iron is at
ice cold,
at 0 degrees, you know, Celsius, or even worse, Kelvin. dude, what are you doing? But, you know, that said, I mean, it's Cameron. You know, he's been doubted before, and this could be, you know, he's using all new technology. It could be really cool. But damn, man, why did it take you so damn long? That's why I'm doing this, Jay. All right.
I hear you.
Prediction number three, a gamma ray burst will miss the Earth by just one light year.
No.
And the question might be, how would we even know? And I've been thinking about that. How would we know? But I would think that if it was only a light year away, that it would, you know, that we would, like, just the way you could see a light beam, a laser beam, by it's igniting things that are in its path.
It'll light up the Oort cloud.
Right. It'll light up something that then will spew light in our direction and let us see, oh boy, something's happening. But so that'd be, you know, I thought that was a fun prediction. So gamma ray burst by one light year. If it's 1.2 light years, then I'm wrong.
All right, Kara.
Okay. Man, mine are all not as specific as yours.
You went the fortune cookie route?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. 2022 will not be the year we return to, quote, normalcy. That is what life was like pre-pandemic. We will adjust to a new normal in which handshakes are no longer expected, vaccination proof is required, and wearing masks in public is a common practice, as has been the case for decades in many Asian countries. Okay?
All right.
All of 2022. Number two. Somewhere in the world, a major city will be plagued by drought, an extreme storm, and an outbreak of a deadly disease all within the same month.
Wow, that's pretty specific.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's specific, but I think it's also high probability, sadly.
Same month, though. That's what makes it tight.
I think it could happen. Okay, and then number three. Income inequality in America will continue to widen, and the world's richest 1% will accumulate more wealth than at any other time in the history of democracy, matching only numbers seen during historical aristocratic oligarchies.
Okay.
I like it.
I don't know how I'm like going to research it, but, that, but I think I'm going to have to.
Start researching it now. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, Jay.
I have the Supreme Court in the United States will overturn Roe versus Wade.
Ah,
oh, God, Jay.
What are you doing, Jay?
That hurts, man. It's worse than Avatar 2, man.
What are the odds?
I actually think it's going to happen. I'm making a legitimate prediction here. AI will discover a new drug that's useful. I don't want it to say a new drug because it
It's kind of like Evan's prediction.
Hasn't that already happened?
A little.
It has.
Yeah.
That's my weak one.
But another new one. Okay.
Right. I have another one that's along the same lines. CRISPR will cure a horrible disease.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Is that okay, Steve?
Okay.
You're right with that one? And then I got a last one here.
Oh, special.
Either Bitcoin or Ethereum will significantly increase in value.
Everyone loves the Bitcoin predictions.
Yeah,
those are like some of the most common ones to look up when I was trying to see. Yeah, like year in review, 2021 predictions. Everybody had their Bitcoin all over the place. Some people thought it was going to hit like 300,000.
Yeah, I know. I know. The things that I've been reading about 2022 for a legitimate prediction that somebody is making right now, along with a lot of horrible predictions about how it's going to completely crash and burn. One person did say that Bitcoin was going to hit 100,000.
Was it? What was its high? 50,000?
Yeah, 50,000.
Yeah, about that.
I think so. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
All right. That's good.
Right. All right, we're going to try to churn our way through a few news items, starting with you, Jay. You're going to tell us about the space highlights for 2022.
Yes, these are not any kind of predictions. There's no psychic ability here. This is just reality. Looking at 2021, we had a great year, right, for space exploration. Mm. I thought it was very exciting. You know, other than the moon missions, it was probably the best year we've had in a long time. And when I say the moon missions, I'm going back to the original Apollo moon missions. You know, I think that this past year has been incredibly successful and very, very exciting. So we had a launch of the Webb Space Telescope.
Yay!
You know, as we speak, it has unfurled all of its heat shields, and the main telescope is being unfolded.
It's unfolded. It is unfolded.
It has successfully unfolded at this point. Good. Okay. So it's jumped through a lot of the 350 danger hoops that it had to go through. It's gotten pretty far along.
Danger hoops.
We had two rovers land on Mars.
Oh,
and
yes.
One of the rovers launched that drone many, many, many times.
Yeah.
So they were flying a drone, you know, a vehicle
on
another planet.
That's right.
A flying vehicle on another planet. Just so cool.
Mars, the planet of robots.
SpaceX had its first crewed docking with the ISS.
Yep.
That's a big deal.
Yeah,
that was
big.
The
yes,
first
it is.
Commercial company kicking the ass of outer space and sending people up there and bringing them back safely. This was the SpaceX Crew 2. Other commercial flights happened as well. So we had billionaires Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson. You know, these crew, you love them or hate them, they both flew their ships to very high altitudes. And another billionaire stayed aboard the ISS as a guest. Did you guys know about that?
Wait,
who did that? Yes, I did.
A billionaire?
Yeah, I think it was a Japanese billionaire. Stayed aboard the ISS as a guest, paid big bucks to get up there.
For how long?
I don't remember. I don't know.
5 minutes?
I wonder how he handled it.
Yeah, interesting.
Like, I hear it's horrific, the smell, when you first walk into that place.
Oh, yeah. Without
no
a doubt.
Way. Don't they have
those? It's a toilet. Like,
stiflingly bad.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be a bummer.
Yeah.
Like, you're so excited and like, oh, this smells like crap.
Yeah,
so
hopefully NASA... they really like manage the expectations on a few things.
Still, I'd be so excited.
So 2022, guys. So here's what is on the books right now. So two giant rockets are scheduled to have their first flights into space. So we have NASA's long-awaited Space Launch System, or SLS. And then we also have the SpaceX Starship. So the SLS system was built to take crew and cargo to other planets. That's from the ground up. They said this is what we're going to use it for. These rockets are crazy expensive and can only be used once. The first flight is supposed to take the Orion 1 capsule around the moon and back to Earth. This is called the Artemis 1 mission, and this is an unmanned mission that is a test for the eventual manned moon mission coming in a few years. We don't know how many, but it's definitely not 2024. This mission is slated for March or April. And that is not far away, guys. We're going to have, you know, a rocket launch Orion 1, and it's going to go around the moon, and it's going to come back to Earth in the next few months. That is happening.
Mm.
All in preparation for the Artemis 2 mission, which is bringing people back to the moon, finally. And that's going to be one of the most exciting moments of my life, to be conscious while that happens. Unbelievable. SpaceX Starship, this is solely built by SpaceX. It's not a group of anything. It's one company. It's fully reusable rocket system. If you're not impressed, you should be. That is an amazing technological feat that they pulled off. This rocket is planned to have an uncrewed test flight this year. This is the big one, guys. This is the one that we, you know, the big silver Cadillac looking one. It's going to enter orbit. It's going to then splash down near the Hawaiian Islands. That's going to be one of the big tests that they do before they, you know, eventually send this version of it to the moon and land people down on the moon. There are also potentially 9 moon missions coming. These are from several different countries and private companies. So 5 of these missions are backed by NASA. One of them is a miniature satellite called Capstone. It's going to be launched from New Zealand in March. Its goal is to learn about lunar orbit, which I think is, you know, if you think about like what we have coming, they need to know more information about how to orbit the moon, where, you know, what the actual orbits are going to be that they're going to use by NASA and the European moon base. Very cool stuff. NASA is also sponsoring 3 missions to the moon's surface. We have a private companies are building the equipment for these missions under NASA's Commercial Lunar Payload Service program. And all of this is in preparation, again, for sending people back to the moon. So we have a lot of moon missions that are going to be happening this year that are going to be giving us all the data that we need to make the final plans for the moon mission that's going to take place hopefully in the next 3 years. India is likely to land a lunar rover this summer. Russia has plans. I know, right? Like India had a failed rover attempt.
Yeah.
And I guess they had another one in the queue, so that's going to happen sometime this summer. Russia has plans to land on the moon for the first time since 1976. South Korea is planning to ride a SpaceX rocket to the moon, possibly in August. We also have a Japanese private company that's working on landing a craft that is going to be carrying cargo along with a rover to the moon surface. And of course, guys, any of these missions could easily not happen because of the cost, complexity, whatever. You know how it goes. You know, like look what happened with the James Webb telescope. Like a cable had an issue like, you know, a week before they were going to launch it. These things happen. So you never know, any of these missions could be scuttled in a heartbeat. Another interesting thing that's going on, China's been working on its space station program and plans are in motion right now to add 2 more modules this year. This space station is starting to come along very nicely. Both of these modules will be launched on China's most powerful rocket, the Long March 5B. I believe it is pronounced March, but I could be wrong. And finally, NASA has plans to crash a spacecraft into an asteroid. You guys had to have read about this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So cool.
Yes.
Very, very awesome. You know, this is something that we should have been doing a long time ago. This is called the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART for short. Plans to deliberately crash into the asteroid named Dimorphos, right? A small asteroid that will serve as a test of this new asteroid redirection system. If the system proves to be successful, it could be used to redirect an asteroid that may actually hit the Earth in the future, which, you know, just to set your mind at ease, we don't have any predictions of anything like that happening. We don't, you know, we're not observing any asteroids that are going to hit the Earth, but we are preparing because statistically it's going to happen. And if we don't have a system in place, we're in trouble.
And we all know how fast things can change from watching that documentary, Don't Look Up.
Yes.
We must be prepared.
It's heading for
One interesting thing about the concept with DART is it doesn't have to blow up the asteroid. It just has to nudge it. If you go out far enough, you know, you just have to push it a little bit to get it off the course.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
And that's their goal, right? Right?
Just a little nudge. All you got to do.
That's all you need
to
do.
You got to catch it early enough. That is the point.
So keep your eyes peeled, guys. Let's look up to the stars in 2022.
Yeah, look up.
Definitely.
Do look up.
A lot to look forward to. It's going to be an exciting decade. It really is.
Yeah, it will. It will be. Space-wise, one of the brighter points, hopefully.
Yep.
All right, Kara, tell us about the effects of having an education on your aging brain health.
Yeah, so I got really excited when I came across a write-up in Neuroscience News, but this is a perfect example, Steve, and I know that we deal with this all the time on the show. The press release talking about something that's kind of not what the study was about.
Yeah.
And it was like a weirdly incidental and very small finding. So I'll tell you about what the press release built up first, and then I'll tell you a little bit about the other stuff in the study. So this was a study out of the University of Zurich, and it's actually a really interesting thing that they did is they looked at longitudinal data across 7 years of a healthy aging cohort of individuals. They looked at 216 healthy, and by healthy, I mean cognitively healthy, older adults. Their average age was 71 when they started the study. And then, of course, followed them for 7 years. And really what this was a neuroimaging study. They wanted to look at their brains at several points. They also wanted to do some neuropsychological testing to try and look for correlates between what they saw on neuroimaging, specifically with MRI, and performance, and they really did focus on processing speed. But anyway, going back to the press release, what the press officer from the University of Zurich highlighted is that there was a significant difference between what was happening on neuroimaging, as measured by a lot of little things, which we'll explain, and somebody's level of education. So their claim is that higher level of education is more protective against cognitive deficits later in age, but that's as measured by some very specific markers. So it's not a direct measurement. They kind of holistically were looking at something called cerebral small vessel disease. And cerebral small vessel disease has been identified as sort of these like subclinical, very often, indications of problems within the vasculature of the brain. And they looked specifically at what are called white matter hyperintensities. So again, remember, this is a neuroimaging study. They were literally looking at these spots that glow on fMRI. They're these white matter lesions that are hyperintense when they look at MRI scans. And even though we can't say that white matter hyperintensity means X, we can say more of them tends to be correlated with more of these types of problems in brains, like they've been associated with Alzheimer's disease, with cognitive decline, et cetera. So they looked at white matter hyperintensities. They looked at normal appearing white matter, so just healthy white matter in the brain. And remember, white matter as opposed to gray matter. Do you guys not, Steve, remember the difference between the two? Not Steve. White matter are like the tracts in the brain. Those are like the where the axons are bundled. And then gray matter is like the actual cell bodies of the neurons. So white matter is where we see tracts. Gray matter is where we see the cell bodies kind of clumped together.
That is correct, Kara.
They also looked at
10 points for Kara.
I love that they call it brain parenchyma volume. I was like, I think I know what parenchyma is, but I had to look it up. Basically, just the functional parts of the brain. So neurons and glial cells, like the total volume of the actual brain, not other structures. And then, like I said, they measured processing speed using neuropsych assessments. And then they used all sorts of complicated statistics to look at all these different covariates and say, okay, from baseline to 7 years later, across all of these different measurements, what can we say about this group of people we were testing? And so the thing that they wrote the write-up about is that, hey, people who had a more education tended to have lower levels of white matter hyperintensities, fewer, they call them lacunes, but I always heard it called lacuna.
Yeah.
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 Like
me
with
too.
An A.
Lacoons,
yeah.
Lacoons or lacuna, either one.
Yeah. I Googled
lacuna,
it.
And
yeah.
It's the adjective.
Like the word apparently was lacune first, which means lake. And then we would say lacunar stroke or lacunar ischemia or whatever. And then, yeah, now we say lacuna. But so basically, yeah. that word comes from the word for lake. So it's like these little pockets of CSF where there used to be tissue and there's no tissue anymore. So usually it's going to be where there was an infarct or where there was some sort of necrotic damage. And basically the tissue is no longer there and it just filled in with CSF. And so they found that the higher academic background was, as they say, protective against these markers of age-related cognitive decline. And remember, this isn't a group of people who didn't have dementia. These were like healthy aging individuals. I struggle with the word protective because there's no way to know the causal direction here. All they know is that people who tended to not have as severe small vessel disease markers were also people who tended to have more education. But we have no idea if people chose to get more education because they were already tending towards educational interests, right? Or whether the education itself was protected. Are these people, is there a neurological reason? Is there a psychological reason? Is there an intellectual reason? But we do know that there's a correlation, and I think that's the important thing to note. But this is unsurprising to me because as anybody who studied neuropsychology or neurology knows, in the event of a severe brain injury, or actually I shouldn't say severe, but mild to moderate, let's say traumatic brain injury, the most protective factor, the best predictor of a possibly good outcome is your premorbid functioning. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, were you already highly intelligent? Did you already have good processing speed? Were your cognitive levels already high? If so, it's going to be more predictive of you doing well after an injury. So it's unsurprising that somebody who's highly educated is also more predictive against these sort of subclinical vascular damages. But they also looked at other stuff. And I think that's actually where there's a lot of kind of interesting stuff in the paper. Like, they found that antihypertensive drugs were associated with fewer lacuna, both in number and volume. And they also found that antihypercholesterolemic drugs actually were associated with higher processing speed. And that's kind of weird at first blush, because if you think about it, you're like, well, people who need to take antihypercholesterolemic drugs and antihypertensive drugs are dealing with heart issues and cholesterol issues. So why would they actually have better processing speed and a fewer number of basically these like brain infarcts? But then you think, okay, well, we know that these drugs are actually protective against stroke.
Yeah.
So it could be that, you know, the fact that they had been on them for a while was actually protecting their brains over time. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, this is an interesting outcome, but it's confounding factors galore with this study. And
I mean, as most longitudinal studies have.
Yeah, but there's a lot of plausible things that could be going, like very plausible factors that could be involved here. For example, as you say, the higher you are, the more reserve you have, the farther mm-hmm. you have to fall. But that means that as you lose functions, like if you build up your muscle, if you get a muscle wasting disease, you'll be stronger for longer because you have more reserve.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If you build up your cognitive function through use and education, et cetera, then as you start to lose your functionality, cognitive function, because you have Alzheimer's disease or whatever, it won't become as symptomatic for longer because you have more reserve, you have more function to fall back on. But also we know that controlling your blood pressure is probably the single most important thing you could do for your cognitive function long-term medically.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. And, think about blood pressure, it could correlate with a number of things here.
Oh yeah.
Just taking good care of yourself. Maybe people who are academic have less stressful lives. I don't know. It could be versus people who don't. You know,
or maybe they're more educated on the fact that taking care of your blood pressure could be preventive.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, you could make a plausible argument that being intellectually stimulated recruits more neurons, and they could literally just stave off the pruning of your neurons.
And I think
loss of cells.
And the thing is, too, they didn't actually look at disease process. So that's the other important thing. We're looking at cognitively healthy individuals. They removed anybody from the study that had indications of dementia. So they weren't looking at the protective factors of education on dementia, on abnormal cognitive function. They were only looking at healthy cognitive aging. Decline. Yeah.
Which has a huge range.
Huge range. And again, education in and of itself has so many confounds. You know, is somebody who chooses to get a higher level education already educationally oriented? It's very hard to know. Do people go to college and get upper level degrees because they're smart and because they're interested in these things? Or do they become smart and interested in these things through the educational process?
Yeah,
I don't think you can
both,
tease those apart. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, Bob, you're going to tell us about the physics of ramjets.
Yes. Interstellar travel technology in the news recently, and that means that you're going to hear about it from me. So this time it's the famous Bussard ramjet that uses a magnetic field to scoop up hydrogen in space to travel ultimately at a decent fraction of the speed of light. The maths and theory behind this potential tech was reassessed recently using modern ideas and technology, and the researchers claimed the classic good news, bad news scenario. So the only difference this time around is that I'll give you this good/bad news in any damn order that I please. I'm not going to say, what do you want first? In fact, I haven't even decided yet. We shall see which comes first. Okay, so this assessment of the feasibility of this sci-fi tech was led by Peter Schatzschneider. He's a physicist and material science specialist with the University of Vienna, and also a science fiction author, which is a cool and awesome, actually, combination.
of skill sets. And then he also is partnered with Albert A. Jackson, who's a physicist with the Texas-based aerospace company Triton Systems. All right, so their study is entitled The Fishback Ramjet Revisited, which will appear in the scientific journal Acta Astronautica in February 2022. Alrighty then. So the story starts with a physicist. His name is Robert W. Bussard. His proposal paper in the 60s titled Galactic Matter and Interstellar Flight outlined the now famous Bussard Collector Bussard Ramjet, this ramjet propulsion, which I briefly described above. So now in the interview, he was interviewed, I think it was in 2007, about his famous idea from the 60s. And he said that he was having dinner, right? It came to him when he was having dinner, but it came to him from the frustration that interstellar travel with rockets requires that, quote, you have to carry all your reactive propellant on board, right? Steve, Jay, oh my God, that's it. So this means that you need Brobdingnagian spaceships to hold all the fuel that you want. If you want to do things like accelerate for a long time, you're going to need crazy amounts of fuel to do that with conventional fuel. And then, of course, you'll need more fuel to push that extra fuel, and so on and so on recursively.
The tyranny of the rocket equation. Rocket,
exactly. So now this was especially poignant for the scientists in the 60s, because in the 60s, they were also designing these famous nuclear rockets that were coming within the realm of possibility for our technology, like the Daedalus concept, which I'm sure you guys have heard of. So they were talking about these nuclear rockets so what could they do? You know, we could almost build these things. We could, you know, it's not something that's far out of our reach. What can they do? So they designed them, and they were wonderful, but they were big. Even these nuclear engines were gargantuan, because even they would need a lot of fuel. And I saw a
Was it the size of a city?
No, not that big. But I saw a Daedalus next to a Saturn V, and it looked like a pro wrestler next to a baby. It was this as big as a Saturn V was. The Daedalus was gargantuan, many, many times bigger. Nuts. But, you know, not undoable, but just like way too big. So Bussard then thought, why bother to carry fuel when the fuel is sitting out there in the spaces between the stars? And I'm still quoting him, it's hydrogen. What do the stars run on? The fusion of hydrogen. So that was kind of like the genesis of his idea. And from there, he envisioned his ramjet with huge magnetic fields in front, capturing the free and sparse hydrogen that's in the ISM, or the interstellar medium. It's just there waiting, you know, waiting for us to grab. It's very sparse, but then, you know, you have a big enough magnetic field. You could grab enough of it to make a difference. So what would happen?
Big collector?
Yeah. So what would happen, though, is those protons would then follow the field lines down more and more constricted pathways in the ever-narrowing throat of the field, the magnetic field, until fusion occurs. And then the magnetic field could then direct the titanic energy that's liberated in that process and direct it as the thrust of the rocket exhaust. Bam! There you go. There's your Bussard ramjet. I've heard estimates that people say they could potentially get to 10% of the speed of light or 20% of the speed of light. People have talked about it for decades, but that particular part of the story is not over, because 9 years later, John Fishback, MIT researcher, really dived into the possibility of this magnetic field. He created a paper titled Relativistic Interstellar Spaceflight. So he described the idea of this magnetic scooping mathematically and theoretically for the first time, and gave a real solid scientific treatment of this idea, and said this could work. So since then, it's sci-fi writers love the idea, and so many sci-fi and just science and space fans are familiar with this Bussard ramjet. Larry Niven used it in some of his stories. Victor Vinge used it. Powell Anderson used it. He used the ramjet idea in his novel Tau Zero. And Steve Sagan mentioned it not only in Cosmos, but also also in a paper that he wrote. So I remember hearing about this in when was that? The 70s? I mean, we've known about this for so long. It's always been kind of out there, like, oh, what a great idea. That's maybe not too far away. So more than half a century, though, has passed since then. It's been a lot of decades. And except for a couple of papers in the early 70s, no one's really done a deep dive that I'm aware of on this idea, just to see, all right, is this still a viable idea? So, of course, until now. That's why we're even here today.
So this new analysis uses this Fishback's paper that I mentioned, used his paper as a starting point. And that's why the new researchers called it the Fishback Ramjet Revisited, because they're revisiting his technical treatment of this whole idea of a magnetic field scooping up hydrogen in this ramjet. So they used software that was developed at the University of Vienna, and it wasn't made for this purpose. It was made for calculating electromagnetic fields in electron microscopy. So great alternative use for that new software. So what did they find? So I'll start with the good news. You knew I would start there because that's kind of like makes sense. The good news is that a static, slowly changing magnetic field, much like what Fishback envisioned back then, it really could funnel interstellar protons into a fusion reactor. There's really nothing wrong with the science that says that the magnetic field can't do that. So this would allow then, ultimately, if this whole thing worked, what the idea is that you would allow long-term acceleration at a comfortable 1G, one Earth gravity, right? Just keep accelerating. Not, you know, it's not onerous because you live in 1G your entire life if you're sending people, and you could eventually attain relativistic speeds in a reasonable amount of time and travel amazing distances. If you could keep up that acceleration, then you could attain amazing velocities, all else being equal. And of course, that's something that you can't do with conventional rocket fuel. You can't, because you would just need way too much. You can't continue that acceleration for that long. Just not really possible, not practical at all, unless you want to pillage an entire solar system of hydrogen, get to Jupiter and Saturn and even the sun and get all your fuel. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. There's got to be a better way. And this is Bussard's really his whole goal here. The problem, though, is this. Who has a guess?
Is it like once you've captured the fuel, like it has to be funneled into a collection device and then you have to compress it, right?
Yeah, that's not the problem. The problem is the actual magnetic field itself, the actual field. The field would work, but actually that the field is still ultimately the huge problem. So here's why. So to create the thrust of about 10 million newtons, which is a lot of Fig Newton cookies, twice the main propulsion of the space shuttle. So that's, you know, twice the space shuttle. That's not crazy. It sounds reasonable. But to do that, to create that thrust with a ramjet, you would need a magnetic field that is 4,000 kilometers or 2,485 miles in diameter.
What's the diameter of the moon?
So it's 2,000 miles. So it's about as wide. It's about roughly the width of the United States. But that's not even the worst of it. That's nothing. You know how long it would need to be? 1 AU. 150 Whoa. Million kilometers, 93 million miles, the distance from the Earth to the sun. Well, that's what the equations are showing.
That's a deal breaker. Like, we don't even need to talk further about it. From here on, we could just stop talking.
Yes, but if I didn't have some interesting stuff to say, Jay, I would stop right now. But Jay, you know what I was thinking at this point? I'm thinking of these protons being caught into the maw of this gargantuan magnetic field and then traveling 93 million miles. And you know what song pops into my mind? Down, down to Fusion Town. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So the basic reason why this is such a problem is this. And this is interesting because think about it. You like that, Jay? The faster you go, right? You're going faster and faster, accelerating at 1G for days, weeks, months, years. The faster you go, the stronger the magnetic field you need to be, right? The stronger that field needs to be to keep the protons properly aligned. Otherwise, they're just not going to go down to Fusion Town, right? They're just not. So it's got to be increasingly more powerful. But the stronger the magnetic field, the more the mechanical stresses are. So then you beef up your mechanical materials, the ship itself, essentially, and the technology, you make it stronger. But when you do that, you're adding a lot of weight. And when you add a lot of weight, you slow down your acceleration. That means this, that you have this balancing act between needing a strong magnetic field and a strong ship to not fly apart, right? So this balancing act means that any Bussard ramjet that we can conceive can only accelerate at 1G for an onboard flight time of 3 years.
That's it. You could only do 3 years, which would get you about 10 light years. And because after that point, acceleration would have to drop, or the source of the magnetic field would just blow apart. So you could accelerate for 1G for 3 years, and that's great, but that's it. You can't continue accelerating, because then the field would have to be stronger and stronger, and your ship wouldn't be able to handle it. And that stinks. But think about it, though. That's still pretty damn sweet, because you're accelerating at 1G for 3 years. That's fantastic, especially if you just compare it flat out to conventional rocketry. That's amazing, because there is no rocket that we will ever build, a conventional rocket, that could accelerate at 1G for 3 years. Not going to happen. You definitely have to not carry your source of your fuel with you if you want to do that.
Yeah, my money is on solar sails for interstellar travel.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be, Steve, what the first time we really can create any sort of interstellar, you know, nanocraft is going to be something like that. But the researchers are not saying this is impossible, though. And this is it's kind of interesting, maybe not for us and our next 10 generations. But they did say this, however, in their paper. The construction problem addressed here, in combination with the revised cutoff speed, puts the interstellar ramjet in the realm of extremely advanced engineering physics. It's very unlikely that even a Kardashev civilization of type 2 might build ramjets. Type 2. So now we've talked about this on the show. Soviet astronomer Nikolai Kardashev theorized a type 2 civilization that can harness most of their local sun's power, right? And of course, we're not even a level 1 civilization yet. We're like I think I read somewhere, like a 0.7 or something silly. So we are so far away from being able to build a Bussard ramjet as it was conventionally conceived in the 60s of being able to, for example, travel to the center of our galaxy within a human lifetime is not going to happen. There's some huge limitations on the magnetic field that we won't be able to overcome with any technology that we could possibly conceive yet. So our descendants will be able to hope maybe build one, or I think they'll just have a much better idea than this ramjet. But so another bit of a fun technology that we've all kind of hoped for many decades is kind of shot down for the most part. But still, the science is fascinating, and if you can get off on the science a little bit, it maybe prevents some tears.
Right. So no ramjet, at least not anytime soon. Okay, Evan, tell us about Elizabeth Holmes' guilty conviction.
Yeah, Elizabeth Holmes. We know her. She was the chief executive officer of Theranos, a health technology company that became quite famous and had high valuation. They claimed to have revolutionized blood testing by developing methods that could use very small volumes of blood, just a finger prick worth of blood, and make all kinds of tests. You can analyze hundreds of tests using their very small machine. Totally revolutionary. Well, yeah, it didn't turn out. In fact, it was a fraud. And the company had to shut down, obviously, in 2018 when it was revealed as such. There were news investigations on them. There were whistleblowers, a combination of things, and it all came crashing down. And then came the criminal charges. So a jury just a few days ago found her guilty of defrauding investors out of hundreds of millions of dollars. These verdicts have pretty much sealed her downfall. She was really, really hyped up as, well, the youngest billionaire, at least on paper, at the time in the mid 2010s when Theranos was thriving with investors. And in a few short years, it all went to less than zero. The jury deliberated 50 hours over 7 days. It was a jury of 8 men and 4 women. They convicted Holmes on 3 counts of wire fraud and 1 count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud for lying to investors about the devices that were developed by Theranos. Now, she was also found not guilty on 4 other fraud-related charges connected to allegations that she duped patients who received false or faulty results from the tests that were conducted by the Theranos machines. And the jury could not reach a unanimous verdict on 3 other counts, which were also tied to investor fraud. So guilty on 4 of the 11 counts.
So is the idea that they couldn't prove or they didn't have enough evidence to support the fact that she didn't defraud patients, or that she actually didn't defraud patients? So I'm pretty sure she defrauded
that
Taker.
She was not the right. That it was not, basically right. That it was not. She was not responsible for the false and faulty tests. You could not pin it on her specifically.
Yeah, it's hard to know, and I haven't read any legal analysis that would parse whether this was decided on narrow legal grounds or on basic principles. But it's bad optics when she was convicted of fraud for defrauding the rich investors, but not the everyday consumers, right? It certainly doesn't look good. But if we want to be optimistic, though, we can look at this decision as affirming some important general principles. It's generally very hard to convict people of fraud. The standard's really high. You have to prove what their intent was and that there was actual harm. And, there are lots of ways to defend yourself against it. And Holmes had a very sophisticated defense, as you might imagine, that tried to mitigate her guilt in numerous, numerous ways. But one thing that I thought was good was that they decided that the fact that she may or may not have believed her own hype was irrelevant. And that's important because whether or not you believe your false claims does not protect you from fraud.
Yeah, just because you defrauded yourself doesn't mean you also didn't defraud a bunch of other people.
Yeah, exactly. You are still obligated to do due diligence to make sure that your claims are reasonable and are truthful. And having no consideration for the truthfulness of your claims, whether or not you believe them, can still constitute commercial fraud. That's, I think, a very, very important principle. So we'll see. We'll see if this changes anything. A lot of people are saying this is the culture of Silicon Valley. I would say it's the culture of America generally, just sort of fake it till you make it sort of thing. But where's the line between a little bit of advertising hype, a little bit of self-promotion, and outright fraud? It's, I think, deliberately very fuzzy. And I think a lot of people hide behind the self-promotion or commercialization angle, but really you're still obligated not to directly lie to consumers.
But it will, because A, it sets a precedent, and B, it is punitive. Like, she will not be able to just do another quick startup and do this all over again, because people will be like, wasn't she the one who was convicted of fraud? And that's important, because if you went on trial and you were not convicted, you see this all the time. People go right back into business. Do we know what her sentence was?
No, it's going to take a few months before the judge hands down sentence. There is no mandatory minimum sentence for these charges. So they're saying there is a chance she can get away with zero jail time, frankly, technically speaking. She is going – there are sentences about fines. There's $250,000 per count plus restitution. So this will bank – if she's not already bankrupt, she'll be bankrupt by this. So
yeah, but that's kind of messed up, because all of her restitution is going to go towards her investors, which means that later when there are civil suits against her from the actual individual she defrauded, she won't be able to pay them.
And for the counts that they could not reach and were basically hung, the jury was hung on those, the government can retry. So there's question as to whether they will try again to bring her up on these charges in the future. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend watching the HBO documentary about this. It is called The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. It came out in 2019. I'd watched it at the time. I watched it again last night to prepare a little bit more for what I was going to be talking about today. It is quite insightful. And, hey, thank goodness for whistleblowers. I mean, is really what it comes down to. Without the whistleblowers inside really telling us the truth about what's going on, who knows how much further this
Yeah, this was company employees, right? It was individuals.
Yep.
All right, Jay, it's Who's That Noisy time.
All right, guys, several weeks ago, I played this noisy. All right, so what is that?
A poltergeist.
A poltergeist? A poltergeist mowing the lawn, right?
Yeah, at first it sounded like a toilet full of marbles being flushed.
Totally.
But then it became very ghost-like.
Well,
so to me, it kind of sounded like a jackpot machine, a slot machine paying off with the first few coins dropping. And then as the coins pile up, it muffles the sound of the rest of the coins all piling up on them.
Well, we got a listener named Adam Hill wrote in. He said, Nut Harvester, love y'all and good luck with the JWST. What's JWST?
James Webb Space Telescope.
How would I not know that? Thank you, Adam. I thought he was like being funny here. All right. So James Grove wrote in and said, Jay, you said last week's wasn't any kind of gun. This is the guy that wrote in the word gun, by the way. Remember that guy? Gun. The nail gun. And he writes in the word gun. And I thought but what am I going to get? A lot of one word, like, you know, email. So he goes, Jay, you said last week's wasn't any kind of gun, but I think nail gun is kind of a gun, so I should get partial credit. And I'm going to say, James, you threw me on my side a little bit with the one word email, but you're correct. It was a kind of gun, and you were correct. I just thought it was funny. He's like, gun! You know, like that was his email. He said that this week he thinks it's coffee beans, preferably Marley Lively Up Dark Roast. I don't know what that's probably a brand that he likes. He says, being ground in a machine. So these are coffee beans being ground in a machine. Not a bad guess, I will say. You actually sent me more than one word of a guess, which I appreciate. But that is not correct. It is not seeds being ground, right, Bob? Michael Bizarre Whiskey. This guy's last name is Bizarre Whiskey.
B-A-Z-A-R-E-W-S-K-Y.
He says, hello, I believe this is someone dumping a large number of coins into a Coinstar machine, which spins up and starts processing while more are being dumped in. Kind of like what Evan was saying. This is not a Coinstar machine, but that is an interesting guess. There is that kind of noise towards the beginning. You do hear that, and I agree with that.
That's what I thought. Yep.
So here's the final guess that came in. This was from Jim Kelly. He said, hi, Jay. This week's Who's That Noisy reminds me of the sound made by those little electric race cars that run on the little plastic tracks that you snap together. Guys, do you remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Sure. I love those. I would buy that for my kids right now if I could. I don't think they even make those anymore.
And then they like fly off sometimes and they go really fast.
We used to.
Yeah, the contacts get gunk on them and they don't quite. They go a little bit and then they stop moving. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I had a kind where you can change lanes. It was like the tracks had two metal strips on them.
Crisscross.
You could change lanes, not the crisscross one. You actually push a button on the controller and the car changes lanes. You could pass the.
Ooh, it like jumps.
Yes.
Makes a
and
jump.
Then. The track I had, you didn't have to have it make an actual loop. It electrified the track. So I would literally make ramps and jump the cars off of the track. It was amazing fun.
Sure.
I miss those.
Sure.
Again, no winner, though. No winner for last week. I read every single email that came in up until Wednesday. There was no winner. So I'm going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to see if I can make it up to you this week. So this noisy is actually was sent in by a listener named Michelle Hill. And this noisy is a hydroelectric turbine. So this is a machine that makes electricity from the passage of water. So let me just play the beginning for you again. So it's spinning up there, generating all the electricity that we need for our electric cars. I have never heard one of those before. So anyway, guys, this week I dedicate this noisy to Evan because I think he's going to like it.
Aw. Thank you.
And this noisy was sent in by a listener named Alex Moore. What is that? All right, so guys, my only hint is that this is not a human being. Good luck. Have fun. Email me at WTN@theskepticsguy.org with your guesses. And also, I need you to send me in some cool noises that you heard. This is how I find most of the noises that I play for you guys. I need you to do it for me in 2022.
All right. Thanks, Jay. One quick email. A couple of people emailed us in response to the previous show. I did use the term off the reservation. I was referring to, I believe, Dr. Malone, the mRNA researcher who is now like an anti-vaxxer, whose opinions are beyond the fringe. And I said that he is now off the reservation. And, you know, no one reacted to that or picked up on the fact that, and a couple people pointed out to us, this is actually a racist phrase, you know, which I accept, but I looked it up just to see what the background was. And it is a direct reference to American Indians in a derogatory way, basically saying that, you know, they're literally off the reservation. They are not where they belong. And that, you know, became a negative term to refer to people, you know, who are out of bounds or, you know, or have, you know, lost their minds. So, you know, it's pretty derogatory. I was not aware of this. I, you know, used the term just as a phrase, as an idiom, without thinking about its etymology. And of course, now it seems obvious once it's pointed out. So just wanted to say, yeah, that we try to be careful about this, not to use terms which are insulting or insensitive, and because there's no reason to. It's easy enough to correct. People point out, you go, yeah, I didn't know that. Now I'm aware. Thanks. I won't do it again. Yeah, but you know, our language is so littered with idioms and phrases that have, you know, pretty horrible origins. It seems like every insult or every derogatory comment is based in some, you know, history of singling out a, you know, a minority or repressed group. It really is incredibly common. So anyway, thanks for pointing that out to us. We will try to be vigilant about that sort of thing in the future. Feel free to point out anything else like that. You know, we do like to be aware of the etymology, the origin, and of the phrases that we use and our vernacular. So we appreciate the feedback. All right, guys, let's go on with science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine and one fake. And I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. Are you guys ready for this week? This is the first science fiction of the year. Three regular news items. Here we go. Item number one. A new study concludes that even the most elite athletes with bilateral amputations running with blade prosthetics have no statistical advantage over non-amputee athletes in the 400-meter race. Item number two, a CERN experiment determined that antimatter has a slightly greater response to gravity than matter, with deep implications for cosmology. And item number three, scientists have found that MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, evolved its antibiotic resistance prior to the use of antibiotics. All right, Jay, you go first.
All right, I'll take these in order. A new study concludes that even the most elite athletes with bilateral amputation running the blade with blade prosthetics have no statistical advantage over non-amputee athletes in the 400-meter race. I'm confused about that. Why, I mean, was there an idea that they would have a statistical advantage because they're using these special prosthetics?
Yeah, because they're adapted just for running.
Understood. All right, so this is saying that statistically they track the same as non-amputations. Okay, this is number two. A CERN experiment determined that antimatter has a slightly greater response to gravity than matter, with deep implications for cosmology. Whoa. This, to me, is profound. Like, if that is true, that is one of the coolest things I've heard in a very long time. Imagine something, some material in our universe reacting to gravity differently than everything else. That blows my mind. If that is true, my God, I could just, wow. Okay, let me try to move on to number three here. Scientists have found that MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, evolved its antibiotic resistance before the use of antibiotics. That is cool too. Wow, okay, that is cool. So if it developed its antibiotic resistance before any use of antibiotics. I mean, I don't see why that would be a stretch here. I mean, I get the implication, but I could see something like that just developing an antibiotic resistance for other reasons. So I'm going to say that's science. I have no information about the first one, about the blade prosthetics. So I am totally guessing here without much more information. I don't know, man. I got to just say that I highly doubt that antimatter would be affected differently by gravity than non-antimatter. As much as we don't know that much about antimatter, I think that one is the fiction.
Okay, Evan?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards what Jay's saying here. Regarding the bilateral amputation, amputees running with blade prosthetics having no statistical advantage over non-amputees. Now, that could be the only thing in that one that may have bearing, but usually not that subtle about making that kind of distinction and then that becoming the fiction. So just kind of, you know, an inside analysis there on that one. But I tend to believe that because you know, so much goes into running at that level with your entire body. It's not just, you know, it's not just your legs. There's so much more going on. So I tend to believe that that one's science, how it's expressed. The one about the antimatter, though, which obviously I don't know a heck of a lot about, other than it collides with matter and they destroy each other, except a little bit more matter existed than antimatter, and that's why we have a universe. That's about all I could maybe say on antimatter. But having a greater response, slightly greater response to gravity than matter, why would that be? Why would it have a greater response to gravity? And yeah, so that one does seem to be huge, and therefore I think most likely to be fiction. The one about MRSA, yeah, how it made some sort of natural, as it were, resistance to antibiotics prior. I don't have a problem with that one. So I'll go with Jay, the CERN one, fiction.
Kara, you're next.
I think I'm going to go with the guys, yeah, for a lot of the reasons that were already mentioned. Although I do think that a blade prosthetic shoe would give a runner an advantage. I don't think that individuals who lost their feet and use blade prosthetics have an advantage over individuals who didn't have an amputation because of all the other factors involved. And I think that MRSA, you know, I remember doing a piece on MRSA a long time ago and having to really like drive into my head that this was not an artificial selection function. It was natural selection that was accelerated by antibiotic use. So the idea that the gene involved would have randomly mutated before the use of antibiotics, it's cool, but it doesn't blow my mind or anything. So I think I have to stick with the CERN one too. It's the least I know about, but definitely the guys make a good argument.
And Bob.
All right. So the first one, the running blades, was a little surprising because I thought that there was some advantage there. Just the fact, I mean, I've seen people run with those blades and they seem so fast. They just do not seem like a hindrance at all. But mainly it's the way that they can absorb and then release the energy from each step. I think better than what human legs can do, kind of like, you know, what kangaroos do, for example. Maybe the fact that, yeah, like Evan said, the terms statistical advantage might have some nuance to it I'm not familiar with. Or maybe the fact that it's a 400-meter race, but if you extend it to, say, 500 or 600 meters, then there is an advantage. Or if you go down to 200 or 100 meters, then there is an advantage. That wouldn't surprise me. The MRSA one, yeah, that doesn't surprise me either. Sure, they could have just evolved that through some selective pressure of dealing with antibiotics, but some other bacteria that they were constantly fighting and trying to out battle. But yeah, the CERN one with antimatter, that would be huge. I really hope this is true. I've been reading about this for years. It would be dramatic. I don't think anyone is expecting that to be the case, you know, when they really do test it, or if they have. I haven't looked at the science news that closely because I picked one item very quickly a couple of days ago and I ran with it and I didn't look too deep. So if this was released today or yesterday, I could have missed it, but still that would be big, big. I hope it's true, but I don't think it's true. So I'll say that's fiction as well.
All right. You guys are all in agreement. So someone's going to get swept today. I guess we'll take these in order. Let's start with the first one. A new study concludes that even the most elite athletes with bilateral amputations running with blade prosthetics have no statistical advantage over non-amputee athletes in the 400-meter race. You guys all think this one is science, and this one is science. Yep, so a little bit surprising, but the study was done because there is concern that or a question about whether or not there is any kind of general advantage to using the blade prosthetics in competitive running sports. So the researchers looked at the 400-meter race, and they compared a number of parameters with between non-amputees and people running with the blade prosthetics, and they found no difference. Essentially, for all of the performance measures, their performance curves were basically the same. So there was no statistical difference between how they were performing in either condition. And they also looked at some aerobic conditions, like outcomes such as oxygenation, et cetera. And those were a little bit worse with the blade prosthetics. So they does appear to be more energy intensive to use the prosthetic than for the non-amputees. But yeah, that was kind of a surprising result. That's not what the researchers were expecting.
Right, because your body didn't evolve a prosthetic. So you don't have efficiency built in.
Yeah, it just seems unlikely. It just seems unlikely that the blades would be statistically exactly like if they weren't blades.
Well, within the sensitivity of the study itself. But they did find that the blades had a disadvantage aerobically over the non-amputees. So they weren't exactly the same. All right, let's move on to number two. A CERN experiment determined that antimatter has a slightly greater response to gravity than matter, with deep implications for cosmology. You guys all think this one is the fiction, and this one is the fiction. Good job, everyone.
They already did it?
Yeah, so this is an experiment specifically to answer this question. Does matter and antimatter respond the same in a gravitational field? And they did the most sensitive experiment to date, looking at antiprotons as their antimatter. And within the very extreme sensitivity of the test, they found that there was absolutely no difference. No difference between matter and antimatter. And that is what the standard model predicts. So this is, yet again, more support for the standard model of particle physics.
Oof. I'm disappointed and a little happy.
Oh, God. Thank God. Because if it wasn't, that would be like, that's like opening up a can of physics worms.
That's what we'd want. We want those damn worms.
We want to break the rules a little.
No.
We have
to. That's how we find things out.
Yeah, but this was predicted by the standard model.
Screw the standard model. It's had its day.
Yeah, standard model.
It's had its day. It needs to fall apart now. We need to find those damn cracks. Jesus. But it doesn't account for things like dark matter or, or...
Nah.
I mean, big, dark matter, huge. Like, it doesn't even account for it. Sorry. Well, so that, on the one hand, that's good news. It means that it clearly is not all encompassing, and there's something subtle out there that we need to learn, but we're just not finding it.
All right. All of this means that scientists have found that MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, evolved its antibiotic resistance before the use of antibiotics. This one, of course, is also science. Very, very interesting.
Do they know the selective pressure?
They do know the selective pressures here. So this actually happened on a specific animal. Do you guys know what it is?
I was
wondering if any of you had heard about this. It evolved on hedgehogs. That was kind of the headline a lot of the news reporting went with. So hedgehogs have on their skin both a fungus and the MRSA bacteria.
Oh, they're in battle.
And the fungus makes an antibiotic to kill the bacteria, and the bacteria evolved resistance to that antibiotic. So that is how the MRSA evolved their antibiotic resistance. It was in response to an antibiotic, just not a pharmaceutical one, due to one made by the fungus on the skin of the hedgehog. Yeah, and they said that about 60% of hedgehogs have this MRSA on their skin. So it's extremely, extremely common.
Yeah, it's not good, man. It's not good. My ex-wife is a nurse. I've been hearing about this for years. Not good.
What, MRSA and hedgehogs?
No, not the hedgehogs. It's MRSA.
Oh, yeah. I had MRSA.
Oh, MRSA. Yeah. You had it, right?
Yeah. I had it. Sucked. Yeah. I had to take 3 different antibiotics. Made me super sick. Like, the treatment was worse than the disease for me, but that's because I had a skin and soft tissue infection. But once it's penetrating, oof. So long as it's still on your skin, you're...
All right, Evan, give us a quote.
You are capable of more than you know. Choose a goal that seems right for you and strive to be the best, however hard the path. Aim high. Behave honorably. prepare to be alone at times, and to endure failure. Persist. The world needs all you can give. E.O. Wilson. Oh, E.O. Wilson, we miss you already. Gosh.
Yeah, E.O. Wilson, definitely a great science communicator. My favorite book of his is Consilience. Excellent, excellent book. Highly recommend it. And I like that quote.
It's inspiring. Good one for the start of the year, I thought.
Well, thank you all for joining me this week.
You got sure, it, brother. Man. Hey,
thanks, Steve.
Yep. Here's to 2022, yep,
looking
man.
Forward to 2022. And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.